Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome again to another live edition of Wall Street Unspun. I'm Peter Schiff. I am president of the show. And your host for the next hour. This is a call-in show, and I welcome everybody's calls. The telephone numbers to call are 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Please call early. The lines are open, and we'd like to get the calls in earlier so we can work them into the program in an orderly manner, as opposed to when they tend to come in towards the end, they bunch up, and it's hard to get to everybody. Anyway, again, every week we broadcast on my website at www.europac.net, and we also simulcast it on shortwave radio at 5.07 megahertz. Well, first of all, a little announcement. Next week, I am not going to be able to do the show. The host of the show is going to be John Catalfio. I'm going to be at the Money Show, and I'm going to be actually in the airport or in the airplane when the show goes on. I was coming back Thursday. I was going to be able to do the show. But in order to get home sooner to be back with my son here, I needed to come back on Wednesday. And so in order to do that, there was no way to do that and be able to do this show. So John has hosted the show before, and so he will be in here. I'm sure he'll have something special to talk about. So make sure and tune in next week for a live episode only hosted by John Catalfio, who is the manager of the Phoenix office. Now, speaking about the Money Show, yes, I will be at the San Francisco Money Show October 16th through the 18th. We just sent out an email yesterday about this appointment. If you did not get an email about the Money Show, you should give us a call, because it means we don't have your proper email address, or it is being your email is being it's being screened. Maybe we're being deleted as spam, in which case, if we've got the right email address, you want to make sure that you tell your spam filter to let a mail from Euro Pacific Capital in, so you'll be made aware of the client-only conference. That's what the email was about. It was about our client-only conference. I think so far we've got about 30 people who have called back to sign up for it. This is something that is not advertised at the Money Show. It is not in the program. It is an event only for clients, and in fact, you don't actually have to be a client. You can just be a potential client. You can be a listener to this radio show. The only thing is, you need to pre-register for it to know where it is, because we cannot advertise for it at the Money Show. They make the room available to me gratis, and so, you know, it is just for our people who have pre-existing relationships with us, for us to meet and talk. And we've been doing these now at every Money Show, and I know the clients get a lot out of it. I like to meet a lot of the clients, and it gives us a more intimate atmosphere, and, you know, we can talk about more specific ideas than what I generally talk about in my public workshops and presentations. But definitely try to come to the San Francisco Money Show. If you live in the Bay Area, even if not, it's a great excuse to try to visit the San Francisco area. It's a beautiful city, probably one of the most unique cities in the United States, and definitely one worth going to. As far as the upcoming events, I'll go over those. I'm going to be in the Phoenix area for two events, the Freedom Summit and the Financial Fest, both November 3rd and November 4th in Phoenix. So if you have a chance. Then I'm going to be back in Las Vegas November 10th through 14th for the Western Regional Mortgage Bankers Conference in Las Vegas. You probably have to be a part of that conference to see me. But who knows? You might want to give a call. Maybe you can come by. And then in November, we will be in New Orleans for the New Orleans Investment Conference. It should be a great time. The conference wasn't held last year because of Katrina. And so this will be the first one in 2 years. This is, the granddaddy of investment conferences. I really haven't participated in this conference in some time, and I just really got back into it, and I'm going to be making it a point to be a very active participant in the New Orleans conference going forward. So they're featuring me in a few things, and I expect to become a bigger part of this conference as years go by. But I will be there again, so that's another opportunity to come and meet with us and chat with some of the brokers down in New Orleans, another great, unique American city, in mid-November, November 15th through November 19th. Anyway, getting back to what's happening in the markets, or starting about what's happening in the markets, also, the lines are still open. There are no callers on hold yet. We've got one, but let me give out the numbers. It's, again, the number is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. The pressure continues in both oil and metals. The oil, I think, hit new lows today. I mean, we're below 60. I think we're below 59. OPEC came out and announced some cuts. But, Saudi Arabia is really the one that's being wishy-washy about it. And I think this is very political. Anyway, the market is still on the defensive. I still think this is a huge, huge counter move or sucker move, and that the underlying trend is undisturbed in oil. And the weak players are getting out, and I think this is probably one of the most healthy developments. I mean, if you call it healthy, from the perspective of a bull market in crude. I mean, we really had some people that got to the party late, and now we're shaking them all out, and they might not get back into the energy sector until oil is $80 a barrel or higher, if then. This move has scared a lot of people out. It's created a lot of pessimism very, very quickly. And that is not characteristic of a bear market. That's characteristic of a bull market. Same thing with gold. Gold is really, in this correction. People are still selling the rallies. Even, the nuclear events in North Korea, the plane crash today, even though it was just an accident, a small plane. If you haven't heard, a small plane that crashed into an apartment building in Manhattan, actually one block from where I used to live when I was in Manhattan. But even, before anybody knew what happened, gold really didn't even catch a bid, more than a buck or two. So it's still a sell the rally mentality. The stocks are still on the defensive. But, again, I think this is the end. This is a correction. I don't know how much more is left. But, the markets seem to be pricing in this fairy tale Goldilocks soft landing fantasy that's not going to materialize. And so people are trying to reposition themselves. People are buying, technology and financial services, and they're even buying back the home builders. And this is all a bunch of nonsense. And of course, we had this announcement: Google went and bought YouTube. Reminiscent of the go-go days. We had the Dow hitting a new nominal high. We've got a $1.7 billion stock deal with Google and YouTube. And I think people are focused on the wrong things, and this is not going to last long. It's a great opportunity for Europe Pacific Capital prospects, Europe Pacific Capital clients, to move more and more money out of U.S. dollars into these overseas investments, into commodity investments, natural resources, precious metals, oil and gas. This is a great opportunity to do that because I'm convinced that we are just at the early stages of major, major bull markets in raw materials and commodities and metals. And the damage to the U.S. economy is going to be dramatic, and it's going to happen soon. I think that, You had George Bush today, and I'll talk about that a little later in the program, you know, claiming economic victory today, you know, bragging about how great the economy is, bragging about how he cut the deficit more than he promised. You would think that this guy didn't run up $3 trillion worth of debt during his 6 years as president. I mean, that's over $500 billion a year. Bush has added over $500 billion of debt each year of his presidency. For him to get on television and claim victory over how responsible he is and how much he's cut the deficit, you know, while he's spent more deficits than any other president in history, it's amazing. It's amazing. But the public is being distracted. So anyway, let me quickly go to the phones and take the first caller. I got a call coming in from the UK. Dominic, go ahead, Dominic.
Oh, hiya, Peter. Yeah, Dominic here calling from London. I've just sort of found out about you in the last couple of weeks. I saw a couple of broadcasts that you made on CNN, and it's lovely to hear someone calling it like it is, as we say over here. But I just wanted to ask your opinion on a couple of things. I hear you talking about the importance of investing, getting your money overseas, i.e. getting it out of the States. What do you think of UK housing? Because obviously you're very bearish on American housing, but UK housing's gone up a lot more than American, and it continues to go up.
Yeah, well, certainly there is a property bubble going on, not just in the UK, but probably the entire English-speaking world, or at least where English is the first language. And I'm negative on the UK property market, although I think the UK economy to a lesser extent is dependent on housing than the US economy is, and the UK is borrowing as much from abroad, and I don't believe that the financing that they have there is as liberal as what we have. I mean, I don't think people are going zero down, no documentation, negative amortization mortgages. Is that correct?
I'm not sure about that. I think there's a lot of people declaring higher earnings than they have in order to get a mortgage. The tradition is that you don't get a loan for more than three times your annual income, and now people are getting loans for five times, seven times. First-time buyers have been priced out of the market. We have this big culture of buy-to-lets. I don't know if you have that in the States, where people are buying properties to let them out. But turning out,
people are doing that in the
annual,
but they're losing money because the rent
mortgage more than the rent.
Yeah, well, as I said, I'm worried about the housing market there. We don't have a lot of UK investments. It's not one of the markets that we're really active in, even though the pound has been a pretty strong currency. I tend to avoid the UK, and certainly the advice that I would give British is similar to the advice I would give Americans, is that you need to have assets out of the UK as well, although I don't think that the situation there is as dire as it is in the United States.
Going the same way as the dollar.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to collapse as much as the dollar. I think sterling could lose value, against the euro or the Swiss franc or the Japanese yen or the yuan or something like that. But it's going to gain value against the U.S. dollar. I mean, our position is uniquely precarious. But other countries around the world do have problems. They do have, housing bubbles and other malinvestments going on that are going to need to be corrected.
Mm. I think it's possible that our economy is more dependent on house prices than yours. I mean, I've heard of
British economy.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not, but
yeah, no, I would find that hard to believe that it was, but who knows? I mean, you could have a pretty big problem over there. As I said, we're not investing a lot of our clients' money in the UK. We really have most of the UK investments that we have are basically funds or closed-end funds in the UK that invest in other countries. For example, we had been buying for clients the India fund that trades in the UK because it's very difficult for us to buy Indian stocks, but we can buy them through the UK. There are very interesting investments that trade in London which have nothing to do with the British economy or the pound sterling.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons London's done so well over the years, is a banking center.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you about silver. What do you think of silver?
Well, I'm bullish. I mean, as you know, I talk about silver all the time. I'm bullish against metals pretty much in all currencies, so I would advise people, you know, no matter where in the world they live, to have money in gold and silver. I think all the world's paper currencies are in danger of losing value. I think the danger is most acute in the United States, but the dangers, you know, are all around the world. And so I think everybody, regardless of the currency that they're denominated in or that they're living in, they should still have some of their savings in gold or silver.
Do you think there's potentially more upside than there is in gold?
Well, there always is. There's always more upside in silver. You know, there's more downside risk as well. But I do think if we get into a remonetization, that it will be gold that's really monetized, not silver. I mean, one of the reasons that we had a bimetallic system was that it was difficult to transact in small quantities of gold. So countries like the United States, you know, we had gold money and silver, and they served as money, you know, simultaneous with each other. But I think today with digital, you know, with the internet and debit cards and banking, I think even if the world were to return to gold standards or governments or individuals, that we wouldn't be carrying around, you know, coins in our pockets. We could carry around debit cards, and we can access our bullion accounts. And so, you know, there really wouldn't be any need to necessarily have silver. We could just have gold.
I see. Digital gold, it's, yeah. And I've got one final question for you, if I may, if you haven't got another caller waiting.
We've got a but it's okay. They just came on.
Oh, okay. Well, I beg his pardon or her pardon. I find it hard to understand in mining companies when I look at them. So as a result, I like the sort of broad ETFs that cover, you know, the entire mining sector. And I'm thinking of GDX, the gold miners ETF. But the problem with that for me is that it's denominated in dollars.
Well, it doesn't matter. See, it's not. People get confused, but the fact that it's priced in dollars doesn't mean it's denominated in dollars, because these are gold mining companies and they're selling gold. And so the price is going to reflect the value of their gold earnings. And so if the shares happen to trade in the United States, they're going to get priced in dollars. But if the dollar falls, let's say relative to the pound, and the value of the shares basically stay the same, then you're going to see the price going up. It's the price is going to rise to reflect dollar weakness, because it's not a dollar-denominated investment just because it's trading on the U.S. exchange. What makes something dollar-denominated would be if it's fixed in dollars, like a U.S. Treasury bond, you know, is dollar-denominated no matter where you buy it. You know, if you buy euro dollars, that's dollar-denominated, even though they might be deposits in Europe or Japan, or a company where its earnings are in dollars. So if you invest in, let's say, a U.S. REIT, you own U.S. property where the rental income is in dollars. So that's a dollar-denominated investment. If you owned a REIT in the United States where all the real estate was in Europe, I would not consider that to be dollar-denominated, because their earnings were coming from Europe. Just because the shares happen to trade on the U.S. exchange doesn't mean that you own dollars when you own it.
I see. That's cleared up a big problem for me in my head. But let's say we get a big stock market, you know, the stock market goes belly up. And but do you think the gold mining stocks, the commodity stocks, the energy stocks, if oil and the metals hold up, do you think the stocks will hold up, or do you think they'll go the way of the market?
No, I think the stocks will go the way of the commodities. I mean, whether they initially dip before they surge, who knows? But I think it's not going to be just a collapse. It's going to be an inflationary collapse. You know, the world's central banks are not just going to give up without a fight, so to speak, particularly the U.S. Fed, and they are going to try to print their way out of this mess. And, of course, they're going to print their way into a bigger mess. But in the process, they're going to make people who have things like gold and oil very rich at the same time where they're going to impoverish everybody else. But that's, you know, there's nothing that we can do to alter.
It's amazing how inflation impoverishes. It's frightening.
Yep. But anyways, I really thank you for your call. I'm glad that people are listening. Are you listening on the website or on the shortwave?
I'm listening on the website. And Peter, you've been great. Thank you very much for talking.
Sure, tell your friends. See if you can get me. You know, I might even be coming to speak at this mining conference they've invited me to speak on. I'm probably going to go. It's in May in London somewhere. It's a gold congress. So it'll be on my website, so maybe you can stop by.
I'll look out for it. I mean, it's 1:15 in the morning at the moment in the UK, so most people will probably listen the morning after.
Yeah, well, all right, well, have a good night's sleep.
I will do.
Thanks for staying up. Yeah, it's good to know that I'm getting calls. You know, we're getting calls from all over the world, and certainly the Internet makes this possible. It would have been difficult for me to get a following in so many other countries without this technology. Anyway, let's take a quick commercial break. I know we've got two people waiting patiently on hold. I will get to those calls on the other side of this break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. And again, let me give out the telephone number for any other callers who want to call. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597 if you have a comment or a question. Anyway, let's go to John from Colorado Springs. Go ahead, John.
Hello, Peter. I have a question for you on the, as a matter of fact, just from what the last gentleman was talking about. You were saying that you think the government's going to inflate out, which I think is what they would want to do. But it seems to me, and this is my question, why is it that you couldn't run into the problem of deflation simply with credit just collapsing out from underneath the government faster than they can do anything?
Well, that is going to happen. Credit is going to be destroyed. Savings have already been destroyed. When all this money that was loaned out to people to pay $1 million for a $300,000 condominium, that money is going to be lost. But the problem is the government's going to try to replace it by printing up new money. And at the same time, you're going to have things like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac going bankrupt, and now the government's going to have to create money to make good on those commitments. Now, assuming that the government has the integrity, and this is a big assumption, I mean, but maybe they'll surprise me, assuming the government has the integrity to allow the deflation to occur without trying to offset it with a printing press, which would mean allowing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to go bankrupt and doing nothing to bail them out. It would also mean doing nothing to try to fight the recession with expansionary monetary policy or, you know, deficit spending. In fact, they would have to, you know, cut spending or raise taxes even as the economy weakened. These are not actions that I would expect, but it's still possible. But even if they were to do that, the dollar would get killed in that environment. Capital would flee the United States, you know, rapidly in that kind of economic contraction. The result would be a big surge in consumer prices. So inflation would be running, you know, out of control, even during the deflation, even as real estate prices, stock prices, bond prices plunged. Prices for food and energy and imported consumer goods would go through the roof.
Can you explain that a little more? I don't quite understand that. Why it would happen that way? Why the prices would go up as the money supply?
No, because the money supply, remember, the money supply is actually not going down, because what's happening is, sure, savings are being destroyed. But remember, the majority of the money supply is outside the United States. And what's going to happen as foreigners decide they don't want to hold U.S. assets anymore, they don't want U.S. stocks, they don't want U.S. bonds, they start selling those bonds and selling those dollars. And then what happens is paper currency comes rushing back to the United States. To buy what? You know, all of a sudden we have a lot more money chasing a diminished supply of real goods.
Uh-huh.
And remember, too, you're looking at supply and demand. When the dollar collapses, which it will have to do, the cost of importing products in the United States is going to go through the roof. At the same time, if I'm a manufacturer in the United States, I mean, there's a few of them still around, but if all of a sudden the dollar collapses, they don't have to sell their goods in America. They can turn around and export them to Asia or Europe and sell them there for much higher prices. So what's going to happen in America is the supply of goods available to be purchased is going to collapse. That's what also makes prices go up. All of a sudden, you're going to go into Walmart and you're going to look around. There's going to be nothing on the shelves. And what is there is going to be very expensive because all these consumer goods are no longer going to be coming in the United States. What's going to come to the United States is going to be our paper money.
That's okay.
So it's a real terrible scenario because what happens for the average American is the value of everything he owns collapses, but the price of everything he needs to buy goes up. And, you know, it's kind of the worst of both worlds, but unfortunately, that's the world we're going to live in. And the only thing that we could try to do is make sure that our little part of that world is as comfortable as possible. And so that means we get our money out of the dollar now so that at least prices won't go up for us. And we sell out U.S. assets now before they collapse. And we get our money out of the dollar before it collapses.
So buying foreign assets that are generating income in other currencies.
That's the key. You want to own foreign assets that generate income so you don't have to sell them. Because I'm also afraid of a very confiscatory capital gains tax is being imposed. And so you don't want to have an asset that you have to sell in order to utilize it. So if you have an asset that's just generating income in a foreign currency that's appreciating, then as long as the government doesn't confiscate the asset, you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or, now, of course, they can dramatically increase taxes on dividends, which would screw us, too. Who knows? I mean, I don't know what the government's going to do, because I do know that our government tends to do things that are very corrupt and, you know, destructive of individual liberty and private property during times of emergency or during times of crisis, and we're certainly heading towards one of those now. Forget about it, that the crises or the emergencies were caused by too much government in the first place. The solution is always more government.
Mm-hmm. John? Could you handle a 401k?
Well, you got to call up and talk to the brokers. I mean, under certain circumstances, we can. I mean, it's mostly pensions and profit-sharing plans and IRAs, but it could be possible. We just have to get the details on it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
But all the investments that we're recommending can be bought in any kind of retirement accounts just as easily as they can in regular accounts.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, John. All right, next up in the queue is Rebecca from Las Vegas. How are you, Rebecca?
Hi, I'm fine. Hi, Peter. Yesterday, I've just...
Come to the Money Show? Or not the Money Show. Well, yeah, I'm going to be in the Vegas Money Show, but it's not for a while.
Yeah.
Yesterday
I was coming home from work, and it was like around noon. This is a comment I heard on the radio. Kramer was there touting, who I do not like at all, touting how he was right on the home builders for like a half an hour. Then I get home.
He was right in what? Was he right saying that they were going to go down or saying that they were going to go up?
Go up. And then I get home, and CNBC is touting how this is just the beginning of a new bull market in real estate. They had all these people on there. And he was like, this was disgusting. I don't know how these people can live with themselves. I just found it just absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, well, you know, they haven't clued in yet. They haven't figured it out. I mean, Kramer, I actually find him kind of entertaining. I like to watch him. And, sometimes he's all right. I mean, he's had some pretty good technical calls. But he's more looking at momentum and looking at the technicals, you know, when he trades. I mean, What I'm glad though is he's out of the oil, he's out of the gold stocks now, and he's out of the oil stocks. So I was a little nervous a few months ago, and obviously in hindsight I was right to be nervous when Cramer was touting all the gold stocks and the oil stocks, because right. It made me a little nervous that everybody that was watching, you know, Mad Money was buying the same stuff as me. Mm-hmm. But now that they're all out of those stocks, I feel a lot better. Although I'm on paper a lot poorer, but I feel better about my position.
Yeah. Well, at least the next time when it starts to go up, we'll be heading up from a higher base than where we were. So.
Oh yeah, look, the trend is up. I mean, we're not making lower lows. I mean, we've come a long way in a few years, but the lion's share of the gains are ahead of us. And as most of the listeners know, I mean, my personal portfolio is very, very heavy in gold and then in oil. I am not investing so much the way I'm advising my clients. I have some of the conservative dividend-paying stocks, but I got enough income right now, and since I'm so convinced that I'm right, I'm trying to buy the stocks that are going to go up the most if I'm right.
Mm.
And I got plenty of income coming from my work. But I'm convinced, though, although I have a lot of income from these energy trusts, I own a lot of those, but I am convinced that, you know, by the time the bull market in gold is more mature, that a lot of these gold stocks that I'm buying right now that pay very little dividends are going to be paying huge dividends.
Nice.
And I'm looking forward to that. Because
yeah.
I'm not going to want to sell them and pay any taxes. So I'd rather collect the dividends.
Yeah.
But, so are you a client, Rebecca?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay, good. How long have you been with us?
About 2 months now.
All right, so, and how did you hear about us?
Your dad.
Oh, from my father?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it was a while ago.
I didn't think it was within the last couple of months.
Yeah. I've been listening to your show, and I've decided, all right, I'll break down into it. So.
Yeah. All right, well, glad to have you aboard. I'll give my dad your regards next time I see him.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot. And I know we've got only one more caller on hold. Let me give out the number, too, again, in case anybody else wants to call the show. There's plenty of room, plenty of time left. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Let's go back to the East Coast here with Harry from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, hi, how you doing, Peter?
Okay, how are you this evening?
Good, good, good. Of course, I'm a client. And I've been a client for a year, yeah. I work with Bruce Alderman.
Yeah, we only have one Bruce.
Oh, yeah, okay. Anyway, I was listening to WBVR in New York, Bloomberg station.
Uh-huh.
They were talking, interviewing this guy, James Cooper, who's a congressman from Tennessee. And he was talking about how the government is the only entity that uses cash accounting methods for its budget, which is totally illegal in the corporate sector. And
what they don't do is they don't do an accrual based accounting, or they don't factor in contingency liabilities.
Right. Well, he actually is coming is proposing some kind of bill or legislation that is asking that the government use modern accounting as corporations do. This way,
it's not even modern. I mean, most people have been using that kind of accounting since before these congressmen were born.
Right.
But that's never gonna see the light of day. Not that it would necessarily change anything, because the deficit is the deficit. It would just make the government have to report it in a more honest fashion.
Right. Well,
The government is, if it's about anything, it's not about honesty.
Of course not.
So.
But what the real message from that was that the budget deficit is far greater than it's ever being reported.
Oh, of course. And of course, the biggest problem is not the budget deficit, but the accumulation of all the budget deficits from the prior years, which are the national debt, because that's what we owe. You know, how much deeper we go into debt each year is just, you know, making the situation worse.
Well,
but everybody focuses on the budget deficit, and they ignore the national debt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always interesting that the national debt always goes up by several hundred billion dollars a year more than what the government claims the deficit to be. Now, how is that possible? because it's only supposed to increase by the budget deficit each year. Yet it always increases by several hundred billion more. And the reason for that is because a lot of what the government classifies as off budget doesn't have to go in the budget. So basically what they've done, what Washington has done, is all they have to do is classify an expenditure as off budget, and it doesn't count. They still spent the money. It's still a deficit, but it doesn't get included.
Well, the defense...
That'd be like you know, you have your checkbook, and you decide, you write a check, and you say, you know, I'm going to make this check off budget, and therefore you decide not, you know, you don't need any money in your checking account to cover it. You know, and you just have to, you know, but obviously the guy that gets the check, he doesn't know that it's off your budget. He deposits it just like any other check. So it's just the whole thing is a farce. It, you know, and the fact that anybody pays any attention when they have a press conference and they try to claim victory, like, oh, we've cut the budget deficit in half. I mean, first of all, you gunned the thing through the roof in the first place. You know, I mean, that's like you know, I marry somebody, she's 120 pounds, and then she bulks up to 200 pounds, and then she goes on a diet, and she goes down to 175, and she wants me to, you know, to be happy. That she's dropped 25 pounds. What about all the weight you put on? I mean, so the fact that you know he took the budget deficit up to 500 billion plus, and then brought it down to 250. Now he's looking for applause.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But of course he didn't really bring it down to 250 because you got all the off budget items, and of course you know one of the reasons that the budget deficit is going to take off in the coming years is the interest component. You know, as you know, the government has borrowed a lot of money over the last few years, and it's all been short-term. And as short-term interest rates are now a lot higher, when this debt matures and, you know, it gets rolled over into new short-term debt, all of a sudden paper that used to cost us 1.5%, 2% now costs us 5%, 5.25%. You know, that's a lot of money when you're spreading it out over trillions of dollars.
Yeah, and it's a five-fold increase.
And, of course, we're headed for a recession. I mean, despite what everybody says, soft landing, forget about it. It's a crash landing. Real estate's going down. Consumers are going to stop spending and start saving, assuming they still have a job. And so the government's tax receipts are going to fall off the edge of a cliff just as their expenditures are going up. And this budget deficit is going to spiral out of control.
Well, one of the other countries that we're borrowing from, not just China, is Iran.
We're borrowing from everybody.
Yeah.
We're an equal opportunity borrower.
But we're threatening Iran or with sanctions, and yet we're borrowing from them.
Yeah, we borrow from the poorest countries in the world. We borrow from we have trade deficits with everybody. We don't save anything. We've had a negative savings rate in the United States for something like, you know, two or three consecutive years. I mean, every single month.
Yeah.
So we have to borrow from everybody else. And at some point, the rest of the world is going to realize that this is a bad deal for them, that we are squandering their savings. Instead of having their savings lent out locally, where it would be to businessmen for capital investment that would actually improve their future living standards, instead they lend it to us so that we can squander it on our own consumption, which does nothing for them. In fact, it makes them worse, because we just consume the goods that they would have consumed if they didn't lend us the money.
I wonder if our corporate sector are very... You know, corporations understand what the government is doing with budgeting its money, because ultimately it's going to have a major effect on that.
Some people know about it, but no one cares. Everybody just assumes that it's no problem. You know, but of course it is. And basically the way everybody looks at it is, well, it's not a problem until it becomes one.
Yeah.
Well, that's how politicians think, because all they're caring about is getting reelected. But from an individual investor's point of view, to think, well, I'm not going to worry about it until it blows up, I mean, that's ridiculous, because then it's too late to do anything about it.
It's time.
All of a sudden, you know, if you know there's a ticking time bomb,
yeah,
the solution isn't wait till the bomb explodes. You know, I mean, you're not going to hold it in your hand and wait till it explodes. You know, you're gone. Once you realize there's a ticking time bomb, you get as far away from it as possible. That way, when it goes off, you're in the clear. So the way to get away from this ticking debt bomb is to be away from U.S. assets. We don't know how long the fuse is. We don't know when it's going to blow. All we know is that it's going to blow. And when it does, we want to be as far away as possible.
But when the Band-Aids run out, watch out.
Yep. I mean, they've got so many fingers in this dike right now, you know, they've run out of appendages to stick in these holes.
All right, thanks.
So pretty soon, it's, you know, it's like, or you like, it's like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. You remember that? You know, he's running around there, you know, trying to. Yeah. Eventually, it's going to overwhelm him.
Wow.
And so when it happens, we just got to be prepared. Anyway, thank you very much for the call, and appreciate your business, and send us some referrals.
I always
your account.
I do. Thanks.
Bye. You still there? Okay, anyway, let's take one more commercial break. Let me give out the telephone number, too. The lines are open, so the number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. We'll pick up after the break for any more calls in the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. This is the last segment. If anybody has any calls, call early in the segment so we don't run out of time. It's 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Well, anyway, you know, last week we had the employment numbers come out on Friday, and on the program I predicted that the number would be weaker than expected, and it was substantially weaker than expected. I mean, it was about half of what they were expecting. But the markets didn't sell off. The dollar didn't sell off because the government came back and revised the prior months up very conveniently. And so that took the sting out of the big drop in employment in the current month. But it's obvious that employment growth is decelerating. We still continue to lose jobs in manufacturing and add jobs in the service sector. These jobs are all going to go away very quickly once the dollar really gets killed. But also, I don't know if any of you heard about this, but also in the last week, the Republican administration came out and very conveniently decided or discovered something like 600,000 or 700,000 more jobs had actually been created than what they had actually reported at on these monthly numbers. So all of a sudden, you know, less than a month before the election, George Bush is able to announce that 700,000 or so new jobs were actually created more than they thought, just, you know, out of thin air. I don't know where they pulled these jobs out. And if anybody believes that this is legitimate, you know, I got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn. You know, it's very convenient. Everything seems to be working out at this time for the Republicans. Not that I'm necessarily upset about that. I mean, I don't want anybody to raise my taxes. You know, I want more money so I can invest it out of the country. It's not that I think the Republicans are necessarily any better than the Democrats. I mean, once you send somebody to office, they're all the same. You know, there's no difference between a Republican and a Democrat. All they want is to get reelected. The problem is the philosophy of a Republican, you know, limited government, you know, low taxes, low spending, is not necessarily conducive to getting reelected. So the problem is you send a conservative to government, and as soon as they get to Washington, they discover how much they like it. You know, they like the life, they like the power, and they want to stay there. And the way they stay there is to, you know, play into the special interests, to spend money, to pork belly and all that nonsense. And so, you know, that's what politicians are all about. They're all about themselves. They're all about the lifestyle and the perks and the power and the culture over there and the elitism. And they want to maintain that. And so it doesn't matter what they're like when you send them there. Once they get there, they get corrupted by the whole system, which is one of the reasons that a democracy is not a very successful form of government. I mean, it can't last for a long time because of these reasons. But anyway, you know, with the big drop in the oil price, they've had polls out, and all of a sudden, you know, like a month ago, they had polls, and they said, you know, what is one of your biggest concerns? And like 15% of the people polled said, my number one concern is high oil prices. Now, obviously, these people concerned about high oil prices might not have voted Republican. Well, now, all of a sudden, closer to the election with this recent drop, now only 5% of the people polled say that they're concerned about oil prices. That's very convenient for the Republicans. So you've got the oil prices, now all of a sudden you've got these jobs that were created out of thin air, and now the president comes up and claims victory, that he's a huge deficit fighter, you know, when he's a big deficit spender. So all of a sudden, you know, there's a lot of this rhetoric. And that kind of talk and that kind of rhetoric, where everybody pretends how great things are, you know, in the short run, you know, can be a positive for the overall stock market and a negative for the insurance bearish type investments like precious metals or like energy. But believe me, this is all a bunch of nonsense. I think a lot of it is politics and election related. And generally, though, what happens in these election cycles is these politicians, at least to the extent they think they can try to, once this election is over, the incentive is to try to, you know, whatever bad is going to happen, make it happen sooner. Try to take your medicine quickly so that maybe 2 years from now, when the next election rolls around, the taste will be out of everybody's mouth. So a lot of this could quickly reverse. We can find out about a lot of bad things as soon as your election is over. Problem is, if the politicians think that, okay, we'll just take our medicine and everything will be great again 2 years from now, I don't think it's going to work out for them. I think once we start this real correction, you know, it's going to be something that's going to last for many, many years, and the politicians are not going to be able to pull a rabbit out of a hat come the next election. So I think if the Republicans can manage to hold on to both houses of Congress, which they certainly could do, they could end up losing both and the presidency in 2 years because things will be a real mess. I mean, potentially, if the Democrats took control of the Congress, that might put the Republicans in a little bit of a better position in the next cycle, because at least they could put part of the blame on the Democrats in Congress. But if the Republicans have the Congress and the White House, it's very difficult to put the blame on the Democrats, and it'll be a lot easier for the Democrats to put the blame on them. And the problem there is that, you know, the Republicans wrap themselves in the shroud of limited government and capitalism and laissez-faire, and they talk the talk, but the problem is they never walk the walk. Well, for us, the problem is it's the rhetoric. So what happens is the Democrats then are able to say, you see what happens when you have too much capitalism, when you let big business, you know, operate, you know, on its own, and they're too greedy, and you get these collapses. They say that the reason we have this huge economic collapse is because of unbridled capitalism, because of all the deregulation and low taxes of the Republicans. What we need as a solution is more government control. We would not have these problems if the government had more control of the means of production, if we had more regulation, if we had more taxes, if we had more redistributions of wealth, then we wouldn't have this problem. And because the Republicans, you know, would have wrapped themselves in the clothes of the clothing of the trappings of limited government, you know, it's in trouble. Of course, that is not the case. The problem is the Republicans talk like that, but they didn't walk like that. I mean, the problem is too much government. We've had too much government. We've had funny money. We've had, you know, inflation-based monetary policy. We've had high taxes. We've had even higher government spending. We have excessive regulation, burdensome regulation. That's why the economy is a mess. But unfortunately, you know, the Republicans, and we've got Republicans in both houses, and they're spending like drunken sailors. And we've got a Republican president who signs every spending bill that hits his desk. George Bush has still not vetoed one single bill. I don't know how he, you know, he has a press conference and talks about all the how he's brought the deficit down. What has he vetoed? What has he done? What has he done to stop Congress from spending? Nothing. He's done everything to help them spend more. It's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing. But I have no idea how this is really going to wind up politically. But I do know how it's going to wind up economically. And it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a real, real mess. And the only thing we could do is prepare for it. And, you know, how long this newfound euphoria in the markets is going to last, I don't know. I think it's not going to extend much beyond the election. I think that we're going to, you know, be headed down again in the markets and up again in the metals and the commodities before the end of the year. That'd be my bet. And I think next year is going to be a very difficult year. And maybe we can make it through 2007, maybe. But if we do, we certainly won't make it through 2008. So I think we've got a limited time period in which people can, you know, get their portfolios in order. You know, get their money out of the dollar, out of dollar-denominated investments. You know, own assets around the world, own your gold, own commodities, and take advantage of the short-term pullbacks in those markets. Now, a lot of our other stocks that we're buying are moving higher, the ones that are not related to oil and gas. Although, actually, some of our commodities picks that are not, you know, that are in copper, for example, or nickel or zinc, are actually still rising. You know, it's just the ones that are pure oil and gas or some of the utilities that are in those sectors that have gotten hit. But these stocks are going to come back. I'm convinced they're going to come back a big time because the underlying trends, the big picture fundamental forces that drove these markets in the first place are only more powerful. It's only some of the speculators moving out and some other, you know, short-term technical factors that have caused these price declines. And so we need to take advantage of it. We really, really do. If you've already got your exposure to that sector, you know, and you're like, and you don't really want to have any more, then you just ride it out. You know, it's no big deal. I mean, worst case scenario, some dividends might get cut. These are still dividends that if you bought these stocks many years ago, they're still being cut to levels that far exceed what the dividends were when we first bought them. But any cuts in the dividends, I do not think are permanent. Remember, the dividends are a reflection of their earnings, and their earnings can rise as quickly as they fall, based on a reversal in the price of oil and natural gas. And so when that happens, these companies could just as easily increase their dividends as they cut them. But even if the dividends are cut, they're still huge, and they still represent much better yields than people would achieve by stepping out of the market and just being in dollars. And, of course, then you run the risk of waking up one morning and finding out that you're broke. You know, because it's very dangerous for an American to go to sleep with dollars in the bank. Because while he's asleep, people halfway around the world could be waking up, and not just waking up literally or figuratively, but literally waking up to the reality of how stupid they've been, and they can decide to dump their dollars. And by the time we wake up, we're broke. And in fact, I believe that the major economic downturn is really going to get started, not in our time zone, but in the Asian time zone. Because that's where all the selling is going to come from, or the lack of buying. That's where the wake-up call is going to be heard. And it's going to be heard there, but it's going to be felt here. It's going to reverberate all the way from coast to coast. And so people, we just, you know, you don't want to go to sleep at night with your future standard of living based on what dollars will buy you. Because believe me, what the dollar is going to buy in the future is going to be a fraction of what you think it's going to buy. You know, I mean, I just a small example of the inflation that I just experienced on my own. You know, I get a kick. You know, the government keeps telling us there's no inflation. And anecdotally, I always, you know, try to pay attention to it. And I got my hair cut a couple days ago. And, you know, I get these hair care products when I get my hair cut. And there's only one product I get. It's this little moisturizer. It's not a gel, but it just gives a little body to your hair. And, you know, you put it in, you know, after the shower. You know, it's not like a leave-on conditioner, but it's a little, you know, stuff to put in your hair. You know, make it a little, keep the frizzes out of it. Anyway, it's a small little bottle. And so I bought a new bottle because the other bottle that I had, and maybe I bought it 6 months ago, you know, last about 6 months, was almost out. So when I brought it back home, I happened to notice the price. And, you know, they write the price on it. The salon just writes the price on the top. And the price was $17. And I took a look at the one that I just bought 6 months ago. And the price was $14. The exact same size. I mean, nothing had changed. It's the exact same product and the exact same quantity. But they had increased the price by 22%, you know, in 6 months. Now, I have no idea. Maybe I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to hang on to those things. And, you know, the next time I run out 6 months from now, I'll see if it's still $17 or maybe it'll be up to $20 by then. But, you know, you pay attention to what's actually happening to prices because the government's going to tell you what's happening to prices. But what the government tells you might have absolutely nothing to do with what's actually happening. And the same thing with the budget. I mean, the government, just like they can make up what's inflation, they can decide to exclude certain things, they can exclude certain expenditures from the budget. And so all of a sudden the budget deficit is a lot smaller because not all the spending counts. But of course, whatever money they spend, they have to borrow. So the national debt goes up. So just because the government wants to pretend that the budget deficit is smaller, the reality is we still have to fund it. Just because it's off budget doesn't mean it doesn't have to be funded. The government still has to borrow the money. It's still putting the American taxpayer deeper into debt, regardless of whether or not they want to be honest and fess up about it. So the same thing is inflation. But at least if the government is one thing, it's consistent. You know, they lie about everything. You know, they're a very consistent bunch. And so we have to, you know, base our investment philosophy and our strategy on that. I mean, just assume that whatever you're hearing from the government is going to be a lie. Because the government, the last thing the government wants to do is tell the people the truth. I suppose if everything was great, you know, they might tell us the truth. Of course, they'd probably still lie. They'd exaggerate it and make it even better. But certainly when something is bad, the last thing the government wants to do is remind us of that, especially near an election. So whatever you hear coming out of Washington, and for that matter, coming out of Wall Street, because they're all in bed together, and they've got a vested interest in perpetuating the same myth. And these guys all watch each other's backs. So, you know, you got to, you know, take all this stuff with a grain of salt and realize the biases and the ulterior motives behind the messengers. And you've got to keep your eye on the truth and continue to invest that way. And that's what we're doing at Euro Pacific Capital. So I know we're running out of time here. We're going into the last couple of minutes. So let me just remind everybody that, you know, to come to visit the website if you're on shortwave, you haven't been to my website, www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net. Great stuff on there. I mean, make a point to go there every day. Every morning I put a bunch of articles on there that I think are interesting and worth reading. So you've got your news stories there. I put all my weekly economic commentaries. I try to write one once a week. I have been doing that. And you can get that. You can, you know, watch some of my recent television interviews. You know, you can, you know, look at some of the news stories where I've been quoted. You can sign up for the newsletter. You know, we're working on the next issue of the Global Investor. We've got some really interesting new recommendations on some preferred stocks in that letter. It should be coming up in the next couple of weeks. If you're not currently getting the newsletter, make sure to go onto the site and subscribe to it. It's free. And if you're not getting it and we have your email address, again, you've got to get to your spam filter and make sure that it's going through. Also, you know, we've got three research reports on the website. The newest one is on Canadian Oil and Gas Trust. A great time to read that one because these trusts have all pulled back. Anyway, the website, www.europac.net, and give us a call at 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. That's the main office. You can go on the website and get the 800 numbers for the Newport Beach office and the Phoenix office. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Again, I will not be here next Wednesday, but John Catalfio will be. I'll be here again in 2 weeks live on Wednesday at the same time at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Thanks for listening. So long, everyone.